Yeah. So, in the second chapter, this is the second chapter, somewhere there, I think it's there. This verse is there, first canto, second chapter, Narayanam Namaskritam, by Suda Goswami. And he says, before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, right? Narayanam Namaskritam, let us offer our respectful obeisances to Nara and Narayan, and to Vyasadeva, the author, and then to Sarasvati, the goddess of learning. Like that. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we were reading second canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 2, last night. So why not continue? It's good. Sukha uvacha evam pura dharanaya atmayoni evam pura dharanaya atmayonir evam pura dharanaya atmayonir nastam smritim pratya arudyatushtat nastam smritim pratyavyarudyatushtat evam pura dharanaya atmayonir nastam smritim pratyavyarudyatushtat tatasa sarjidam amoga dristir yat apyatyat prag vyavasaya buddhi. Sukadeva Goswami said, formerly, prior to the manifestation of the cosmos, Lord Brahma, by meditating on the Virata Roop, regained his lost consciousness by appeasing the Lord. Thus he was able to rebuild the creation as it was before. So explaining in the last chapter, chapter 1, Sukadeva Goswami recommends to Maharaj Parikshit to become free from all the anxiety of death, right? That he meditate upon the Virat Roop, right? The universal form of the Lord, and become purified, right? Of all material connection. So now he's saying that even Lord Brahma used to do the same meditation and was able to rebuild the entire universe. Shabdasya hi Brahmana Isha. The way of presentation of Vedic sounds is so bewildering that it directs the intelligence of people to meaningless things, like the heavenly kingdoms. The conditioned souls hover in dreams of heavenly illusory pleasures, but actually they do not realize any tangible happiness in such places. We're explaining this in the modern world is the television commercials. You know, you want to get Lexus? Somebody, the car? Was it Honda, Lexus? Who produces Lexus? It's a supercar, right? So expensive, wonderful. Yes. Toyota? It's Toyota? Yeah, Toyota Lexus. And so you see it on television and how it can drive through outer space and all these things. And, you know, and you download some printout from the internet and you the conditioned soul hovers in dreams of his heavenly illusory pleasures, but actually they do not realize any tangible happiness in such places. So then to calm yourself, you smoke a cigarette and drink some coffee and go to work and think about how you're making money and, you know, with this bonus, you're going to buy your Lexus and then this is going to happen, that's going to happen, you know, you know. For this reason, the enlightened person should endeavor only for the minimum necessities of life while in the world of names. He should be intelligently fixed and never endeavor for unwanted things, being competent to perceive practically that all such endeavors are merely hard labor for nothing. When there is ample earthly flats to lie on, what is the necessity of cots and beds? Out with the sofas. Right? When one can use his own arms, what is the necessity of pillows? When one can use his own palms of his hands, what is the necessity of various utensils? When there is ample covering or skins of trees. Again, this is palm trees. What is the necessity of clothing? Are there no torn clothes lying in the common road? Do the trees, which exist for the maintenance of others, no longer give alms and charity? Do the rivers, being dried up, no longer supply water to the thirsty? Are the caves of the mountains now closed? Or above all, does the Almighty Lord not protect the fully surrendered souls? Why then do the learned sages go to those who are intoxicated by hard-earned wealth? It's a really long purport. Thus being fixed, one must render service unto the Supersoul, situated in one's own heart, by His omnipotency, Krishna. He's there. Because He is the Almighty Personality of Godhead, eternal and unlimited. He is the ultimate goal of life, and by worshipping Him, one can end the cause of the conditioned state of existence. Who else but the gross materialists will neglect such transcendental thought and take to the non-permanent names only, seeing the mass of people falling in the river of suffering as a consequence of recruiting the results of their own work? Others conceive of the personality of God residing within the body in the region of the heart, measuring only 8 inches, with 4 hands carrying a lotus, a wheel of a chariot, and a conch shell and a club respectively. So first he's suggesting this pantheistic view of nature. It's very nice. Very beautiful, wonder view of reality and smelling the earth and seeing the sunlight. So many meditations. But now he's suggesting that try and find the same divinity in your own heart. And he's, you know, suggesting four-armed Vishnu. But what does he look like? What does he look like? His mouth expresses his happiness. His eyes spread like the petals of a lotus. And his garments? Yellowish like the saffron of a kadamba flower, are bedecked with valuable jewels. His ornaments are made of gold, set with jewels, and he wears a glowing headdress and earrings. His lotus feet are placed on the whorls of the lotus-like hearts of great mystics. On his chest is the Kaustubha jewel, engraved with a beautiful calf, and there are jewels on his shoulders. His complete torso is garlanded with fresh flowers. He is well decorated with ornamental wreath about his waist, and rings studded with valuable jewels on his fingers. His leglets, bangles, oiled hair, curling with a bluish tint, and the beautiful smiling face are all very pleasing. The Lord's magnanimous pastimes and the glowing glancing of his smiling face are all indications of his extensive benedictions. One must therefore concentrate on this transcendental form of the Lord as long as the mind can be fixed on Him by meditation. Yeah. The process of meditation should begin from the lotus feet of the Lord and progress to His smiling face. The meditation should be concentrated upon the lotus feet of the Lord, then the calves, then the thighs, and this way higher and higher. The more the mind becomes fixed upon the different limbs of the Lord, one after another, the more the intelligence will become purified. So in the verse before this, 2.2.12, Prabhupada said this means studying the first two cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the lotus feet of Krishna. We become freed then and purified. Our intelligence frees us from this, instructions to trying to find sense gratification in the material world. Your intelligence is telling you, try and find this kind of gratification for your tongue, your stomach, your lusty pleasures. If you become purified, then you can go beyond the first two cantos, higher and higher like that. Unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service under the personality of Godhead, the seer of both the transcendental and material worlds, he should remember or meditate upon the universal form of the Lord at the end of his prescribed duties. So if you actually have him come to bhakti yoga, some sentiment, some feeling, some respect, then go on with this pantheistic appreciation like that. Yeah. And in different societies, different in the Sierra Club, John Muir, that's that. He started the Sierra Club. It's very big in California for many years, thousands of people. And for example, near Santa Cruz, San Francisco and Santa Cruz, California is on the coast. San Jose's inland. You cross from San Jose, the bottom of the bay, over to some hills. You come to Santa Cruz. And this, before you get there, if you get out, there's the John Cowell State Park. And when they came to California, they found all these gigantic redwood trees, and they were cutting them down like that. Actually, one tree was big enough to build an entire house, just cutting them down. So finally, some people thought, there's something wrong with this. So they saved some of them. So John Muir, Henry Cowell Park's about, I think it's about 7,000 acres of first growth redwood trees. And some of them are 50 stories tall. Right? What's the tallest building in Boise? 18 stories. So they say this thing is, you know, what, 20, 30, 32 stories taller than that building. Like that. Wow. Man, they're cutting them down. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and they're thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years old. So it only costs, I think it's like, what is it, like $25 a night to rent a campsite. There'll be 100 campsites there, and you know, you go there and devotees come, and you know, they give you a nice table and a box, and people are, you know, there's enough distance. There's like other campers are just outside your backyard there, you know, some distance like that. And it's kind of nice. There's no alcohol allowed, you know, and you know, people come here. People come to big motor homes, like gigantic, as big as this house, and they camp, you know. There's hot showers for 25 cents for 10 minutes, like that. And so very nice. You bring tents and stay there. And then, well, what are you going to do? It's like, whoa. It's like, you know, want to go home, watch my Nintendo game. But the next morning, there's so many hiking trails. So you take off, and one of them goes beautiful, just goes down through these bushes. You smell these just incredible different fragrances, like bay. You know, bay leaves for cooking. But it's a forest. It's full of them. It's just the air is just full of the smell, you know. And then we started, I had an accordion. So I was going along with a little girl, and we were speaking of songs about the Cowherd Boys and singing. And these other people were coming up the trail, you know, jogging, looking at us, and these enormous ecstatic smiles on their faces, like, because you can hear it just going through the forest like that, just singing, and, you know, children and adults singing, and it's like, they're, wow, like that, you know, amazed. And finally, there's horses on the trail. And finally, you come down to the river. Not very deep, but a beautiful river there. Incredible. You can go across. And we started building pyramids out of rocks. There's so many things you can do, you know, playing. And, of course, by the time you come back, you're starbing. So you eat a robust diet. You know. It's very natural. Then we were collecting pine cones to make an altar. So we built a really beautiful altar out of pine cones and stuff like that and put our deity there. And there was some kind of strange, like squirrel-type guys that had holes in there. And they live in the campground too, because campers would drop stuff. And also, if you weren't careful, they would steal stuff too. They're really good. You know, go off with a whole loaf of bread and drag it down their holes and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So that way, it was very, you know, it was just really, you realize, oh, there's so many things in nature. You know, it's very, you don't have to like create all these artificial things. And everybody was like, you know, wanting to stay longer and everything else like that. Very nice. I was like saying, if you can't think about God as a person, these things, okay, then just think about nature. You know, when you're driving your car, how many layers of man-made substances are there between you and the earth? Between your feet. There's your socks, right? And your shoes have about, how many layers in the shoes? Five. Maybe five different layers in the shoes before you get to the you know, the accelerator pedal. An accelerator pedal, there's rubber, there's metal, and there's a linkage rod which goes to the accelerator thing, and you know, it's just like one thing after another until finally it's something. It's like about, you know, 75 different things before you finally get to the earth, you know, like that. I mean, some people, I don't know when the last time you ever walked barefoot. Huh? What was it? You walking barefoot sometimes? Yeah, on the earth. On the cement. Yeah. But this is the thing. You see, just get close to the world the way God made it. Even Sir Isaac Newton. Maybe, people consider him maybe the greatest scientist who ever lived. Like that. He said there's two books for understanding God, right? The Bible and nature, where God is written with his own hands. And that was his whole purpose, right? In studying nature was to understand God. Yeah, I'm mentioning this. But it's covered like that. You don't want people to hear about these things. You know? Probably gives you an example of the donkey. From India, you know, these asses work like asses. Right? They got big piles of bricks or laundry, and the little donkeys run down the road, five or six. You know, and then what does he give them? He gives them some grass at night. You know, and so rather than escape, they think, well, if we escape, what do we eat? You know, here we get dried grass. You know, there's so much grass, right? So all the Micron employees. You know, what if we don't work for Micron? What do we eat? You know, well, you know, You know? Maybe around here, there's not, it's difficult, maybe, or something, really. But not really, actually discovered. There's enough water, you can grow things. You know? But you go to the tropical areas, then yeah, there is, like, the trees do give forth, you know, fruits and charity. Everything is there and growing quite naturally. It's very easy to live in those places. And in Ecuador one time, going from Guayaquil to one farm area we have on the coast, as one area is just so everything growing, and the devotee said, yeah, one French group of agriculturists came here and investigated this, and he said, this is one area, it's one like peninsula, can produce enough food to feed all of South America, if you're doing it properly like that, you know. So there's this unlimited space. Buckminster Fuller, quite some time ago, he was an architect, inventor, he calculated that all the people in the world could fit in the office buildings on Manhattan Island and have this much room as you have right now. I mean, it's crowded, but it's everybody on earth could fit in the office buildings on Manhattan Island and all the rest of the world unoccupied. So overpopulation, shortage of resources, you know, it's like, it's all a totally artificially created thing. Yeah? So you can live very simply like that, very happily, if you start investigating. And only Krishna himself arranges what you need. You know? That is some, you know, kind of little miraculous thing, little miracle, and money comes, everything, it works out like that. You know? And so, who would give up such thought, right? Except the transcendentalist. Okay. Unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service under the Supreme Lord, the seer of both the transcendental and material worlds, he should remember or meditate upon the universal form of the Lord at the end of his prescribed duties. It's very nice. Every day, sit down, drink a little tea, and you know, think about the world and look at nice pictures. O King, whenever the yogi desires to leave this planet of human beings, he should not be perplexed about the proper time and place, but should comfortably sit without being disturbed and regulate the life air, should control the senses by the mind. Thereafter, the yogi should merge his mind by his unalloyed intelligence into the living entity, and then merge the living entity into the super self, and by doing this, the fully satisfied living entity becomes situated in the supreme stage of satisfaction, so that he ceases from all other activities. Sounds pretty easy, huh? Yeah. But he's already, well, you can see he assumes that Maharaj Parikshit is very familiar with the Astanga Yoga system, you know, with the mystical yoga system like that. He assumes he knows how to do these control things like that. Yeah. Even now, I mean, I don't know, I mean, many people I know in the Indian school system, they teach Hatha Yoga. They teach asanas and exercises and stuff like that. Maybe a little pranayama, you know, for breathing. Even still, what to speak of 5,000 years ago. I can give you Prabhupada's purport here then. The functions of the mind are thinking, feeling, and willing. How does that work? Thinking, feeling, and willing. Huh? The mind. First you think about something, and then actually it's the same way I'm reading Carl Jung, this is the same way he uses feeling. Then you make some value, acceptance or rejection. What do I feel about this? Right? And here's a guinea pig or a hamster or a rabbit. Oh, that's nice. You know? One American movie star, he said, there are two kinds of Americans, those who own horses and those who wish they owned a horse. I was thinking about it. I was thinking, well, actually, I'd like to have a horse. You know, it's very nice. You know. Okay, so thinking, and then feeling, acceptance, rejection. Okay, I want this. Then what's next? Thinking, feeling, willing, and then it passes from the mind to the senses. Right, and the senses start becoming active in different ways like that. The functions of the mind are thinking, feeling, and willing. Prabhupada says, when the mind is materialistic, or absorbed in material contact, it acts for material advancement of knowledge, destructively ending in the discovery of nuclear weapons. But when the mind acts under spiritual urge, it acts wonderfully for going back home, back to Godhead, for life in complete bliss and eternity. Therefore, the mind has to be manipulated by good and unalloyed intelligence. Perfect intelligence is to render service unto the Lord. One should be intelligent enough to understand the living being in all circumstances is a servant of the circumstances. Every living being is serving the dictates of desire, anger, lust, illusion, insanity, and enviousness. All materially affected. But even while executing such dictations of different temperaments, he is perpetually unhappy. When one actually feels this and turns his intelligence to inquiring about it from the right sources, he gets information of the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Instead of serving materially for the above-mentioned different humors of the body, the living entity's intelligence becomes freed from the unhappy illusion of materialistic temperament, and thus by unalloyed intelligence, the mind is brought into the service of the Lord. The Lord and His service are identical, being on the absolute plane. Therefore, the unalloyed intelligence and the mind are merged into the Lord. So Prabhupada is giving a bhakti yoga explanation of how to do this. You know? The yogi should merge his mind by unalloyed intelligence into the living being, and living beings should be merged into the super self. Therefore, the unalloyed intelligence and the mind are merged into the Lord, because we're engaged in service. And thus the living entity does not remain a seer himself, but becomes seen by the Lord transcendentally. It's a very subtle thing. Because we're mentioning showing our PowerPoint show, even buddhi intelligence is rebellion against Krishna, that I can know. So we're not a knower by ourselves. We become known by Krishna. Very subtle. I'm no longer a knower. I'm known by Krishna. Right? When the living entity is directly seen by the Lord, and the Lord dictates to him to act according to Krishna's desire, and when the living entity follows Krishna perfectly, the living entity ceases to discharge any other duty for his illusory satisfaction. In this pure unalloyed state, the living being attains a stage of full bliss, labdho prashanta, and ceases all material hankerings. Wow. Yeah. Again, it's like, you know, three men are working, and an Englishman asks them, "What are you doing?" And he says, "Can't you see, you damn fool? I'm laying bricks." Yeah. So the guy says, "Well, thank you. Forgive me for bothering you." And he asks the second man, "What are you doing?" Doing the same thing. He says, "Well, I'm making an income, take care of my family," like that. He says, "Well, thank you." And he goes to the third man and he says, "What are you doing?" And the same thing. He says, "Oh, it's very interesting. We're building a great cathedral. And today we're making the wall for the main altar. And in about 5 days, and the marble masons will come and they'll hang the marble. And my children are very little now. But when they're bigger, I'm going to bring them here and show them how I helped to build this great cathedral." Joy. They're all doing the same thing, right? But the consciousness is different, you know? So if we actually come to this purified platform where we can be seen by Krishna, you know, here I am, look at me, oh, you know? And we can see what Krishna wants, and we're engaged in that, then even though we're in the material world, the physical world, we're not in the material world, you know? Again, this is a prison, right? Perfect example. There are different kinds of people in the prison. You know, some are in there as prisoners, a whole variety, right? And some hate the system. They're fighting it at every moment. Probably, I don't know if you have, like, they're probably transferred someplace else, right? The guys who are physically violent and, you know, they just will fight with the system. They have more high security place and more control. And, you know, they're shackled on the legs and the hands whenever they go out, you know, like that. Yeah. So different levels of people, you know, relationships. But some people are there not because they're prisoners, right? Because they've come to help people, you know. And even somebody, again, who's a good prisoner. You have people like this. They've surrendered to the system. They're cooperating. And they say, "Okay, I made a mistake. I did something wrong. I know it. And I'm really sorry for it. And I want to correct it. What do I do?" Then the whole system changes. If they have that attitude and people begin to understand that, you know, then what happens? What happens then?
What actually happens for them?
Yeah.
About how to reintegrate back into the natural environment.
And there's educational programs for them, and investigations, and testing, and what their weak points are, what your problem is. You have a real problem with your anger, you know. And so I'm going to give you some, find out, well, you know, like that. So that point, they're not in the same prison as other people. And that's the point he's making. Then the senses then at that point can become fully engaged in transcendental activity. Yeah.
You made a similar point yesterday about you mentioned vocation.
Yeah.
Vocation.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. We have a vocational training program.
Yeah.
And even when staff go there, it's not like being.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an entirely different environment. The inmates behave entirely different. The interaction, it's almost like the line is actually erased.
Yeah.
They're more in a more student oriented.
Yeah.
You
can
see that they're actually working. It's like going to job training.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what the Bhakti Yoga system is. Even though you're in the physical world, you can be completely liberated from it. And that point, your material activities cease. Like that. Yeah. See what happens next. Okay. In that transcendental state of Labdo Pashanta, it's the state of Boise, Idaho, the state of Maryland, but we have the state, the transcendental state. Right? Trying to go there. Of Labdo Pashanta. There is no supremacy of devastating time, which controls even the celestial demigods who are empowered to rule over the mundane creatures. Nor is there the mode of material goodness, nor passion, nor ignorance, nor even false ego, nor the material causal ocean, nor the material nature. The transcendentalists desire to avoid everything godless, for they know that supreme situation in which everything is related with the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Therefore, a pure devotee who is in absolute harmony with the Lord does not create perplexities, but worships the lotus feet of the Lord at every moment, taking them into his heart. By the strength of scientific knowledge, one should be well situated in the absolute realization. We're saying your scientific knowledge. Well situated in the absolute realization, and thus be able to distinguish all material desires. Right? That's quite an accomplishment. I still have material desires. What you're going around with if you're a fire extinguisher, like, Yeah. I remember one time I was in this situation of devotees, and there was this television going on and everything else. And I was saying, Krishna wants this, you know? And so I was after that. I never wanted to watch television ever again. It was like, you know? You have Krishna arranges something so you can try. One Prabhupada says that sometimes devotees have inauspicious dreams, very bestial dreams, and you wake up, yeah, you know, or in the dream you reject it. She said, one should not be too disturbed by this, because Krishna sees everybody has these desires. And so rather than have you take a body where you can satisfy these, you know, then he lets you experience it in dreams. And then you think, wow, I don't want that. Or, yeah, I really want that. Well, okay. You know. So then your devotees many times go through their karma quicker than other people. That's what's happening. You're having different intense experiences of wealth or poverty or suffering or, you know, like that. Because, yeah, Krishna's arranging now that you can experience these things. Right? And extinguish the desire. By the strength, yeah. Okay. Extinguish all material desires. One should then give up the material body by blocking the air hole through which stool is evacuated with the heel of one's foot, and by lifting the air from one place to another in the six primary places. Right? There's one devotee was someplace in Asia. He was working, and he was in a hospital there. He was sick. It wasn't India, but it was like somewhere other near there. And it was a very low income hospital like that. People just coming, like rickshaw wallows, all these guys. And somebody died there, and then the sheets had a burn mark, you know, where the anus would have been in the body. And the guy who was there, he said, yeah, it happens a lot when people die here, you know, because the air is so hot when it comes out of the body. Actually, the prana, when it's finally leaving, there's a lot of heat, a lot of energy. So a lot of times these people, because they're so always indulging and gratifying their lower organs, you know, the Prabhupada says the only pleasure left to an old man is passing stool. And sometimes even that is denied to him. Right? You can't evacuate. But people have consciousness. They enjoy evacuating. Really? Yeah. So people like that. You know? So always grow lower gates in the body. So when they die, they go out that way and go to their destination. Other people, when they die, their mouth is open. That's very elevated. That's Devadam, you know, like that, so on. Yeah, air leaves out of the body. So his recommendation here is again a Stanga Yoga system, And it's actually an asana like this. You put your heel in your anus and then hold your legs like this and that. And, you know, the six, all your organs here, you can close all these like that. There's 2, 4, 6, 8. Yeah. And then, you know, and you can feel that the pressure is there on the eyes and stuff like that, you know. And then where is it going to leave from? It can't go out the anus, it can't go out that. So, out the Brahmarandra. The top of the skull. Yeah. And then lift the air from one place to another to the six primary places, right? Six different, you know, chakras, centers of circulation. The meditative devotee should slowly push up the life air from the navel to the heart, from there to the chest, that's strange, and from there to the root of the palate. You should search out the proper places with intelligence. The Buddhi, the intelligence, is finding these places. He should maintain his aim for going back home, back to Godhead. If he is completely free from all desires for material enjoyment, he should then reach the cerebral hole and, giving up his material connections, go to the Supreme. Okay. Yeah. So we have Virat root meditation, this Ashtanga Yoga meditation. He says, however... It's a very important word here, right? And you're studying that. However, O King, if a yogi maintains a desire for improved material enjoyments, like transference to the topmost planet, Brahmaloka, or the achievement of the Eightfold Perfections, travel in outer space with the Vaihyasas, or a situation in one of the millions of planets, then he has to take away with him the materially molded mind and senses. The transcendentalists are concerned with the spiritual body. As such, by the strength of their devotional service, austerities, mystic power, and transcendental knowledge, their movements are unrestricted within and beyond the material worlds. The fruitive workers, or the gross materialists, can never move in such an unrestricted manner. O King, when such a mystic passes over the Milky Way, by the illuminated, it's nicely describing, I think, the path of these people who are attached. You know, they want the scenic tour out, right? You're traveling, there's on the floor, there's the yellow line and the green line, right? So the green line is the rapid way out, but the scenic tour takes you through, you know, the yellow line, you know, takes you through all these scenic places. When such a mystic attached to these things passes over the Milky Way by the illuminating Shushumna, he reaches the highest planet, Brahmaloka. He goes first to Vaishvanara, the planet of the deity of fire, wherein he becomes completely cleansed of all contamination. And thereafter he still goes still higher to the circle of the Shishumara to relate to the Lord Hari, the personality of Godhead. The Shishumara is the pivot for the turning of the complete universe. This is the Big Dipper. And it's called the navel of Garbhodaksha Vishnu. The yogi alone goes beyond the circle of Shishumara and attains the planet of Maharloka, where the purified saints like Bhrigu enjoy a duration of, 4,300,000,000 solar years, like that. Wow, it's a long time. Yeah. Will I have cable? Yeah. Yeah, have cable television. Like that. Wow. This planet is worshipable even for the saints who are transcendentally situated. I've heard that Prabhupada said that that's where Jesus Christ comes from. Yeah. It's a very high level of just people who have no material distress, anxiety. They're so pure, and they have compassion for those down below. And they come and incarnate and give knowledge like that and follow. And they can see God. Like we can see the deities on the altar, they can see Garbhodaksha Vishnu the same way. And they would never mistreat him or break the rituals like that and so on.
Shishumara, what's the planet name?
I think Shishumara is the pole star and what we call the Big Dipper. Is the Shishumar, like that, and it's rotating. It's a circle for the whole universe, like that. Yeah. At the time of final devastation of the complete universe, the end of Brahma's life, a flame of fire emanates from the mouth of Ananta, at the bottom of the universe. The yogi sees the planets of the universe burning to ashes, and thus he leaves for Satyaloka on airplanes, used by the great purified souls. The duration of life in Satyaloka is calculated at 100,000 million billion 15,480,000,000 years. Yeah. After reaching Satyaloka, in the planet of Satyaloka, there is neither bereavement, nor old age, nor death. There is no pain of any kind, and therefore there are no anxieties, save that sometimes, due to consciousness, there is a feeling of compassion for those unaware of the process of devotional service. This is where Christ is supposed to be from, who are subjected to unsurpassable miseries in the material world. So it's a feeling of compassion is the only suffering. So I was listening to the radio one time, and one Christian preacher was talking about the first part of the Bible, and it's talking about creation, and then it said, and then my Lord said to his Lord. So it's talking about a demiurge in the creation of the universe, like Brahma. And then my Lord, who's the guy who's creating the universe, said to his Lord. And it talks about, there was a discussion that if the human being should fall, then there was amongst the people there, one of them decided, I will descend and help them. You know, the human being, which kind of means Jews, like that. It's a very indication, yeah. Christ is coming from Brahma Loka. Very strange place. As long as you're there, you're there for the duration of Brahma, which is the entire duration of the universe, right? And Brahma is ever youthful. And after reaching Satyaloka, the devotee is specifically able to be incorporated fearlessly by the subtle body in an identity similar to that of the gross body. And one after another, he gradually attains the stages of existence from earthly to watery to fiery to glowing to airy, and finally attains the ethereal stage. The devotee that thus surpasses the subtle objects of different senses, like aroma from by smelling, the palate by tasting, vision by seeing, forms, touch by contacting, the vibrations of the ear by ethereal identification, and the sense organs by material activities. The devotee thus surpasses the gross and subtle forms of the coverings and enters the plane of egoism. And in that stage, he merges the material modes of nature, ignorance and passion. And this point of neutralization, and thus it reaches egoism in goodness. After this, all egoism is merged into Mahatattva, and he comes to the point of pure self-realization. A long purport. Yeah. These fantastic purports. Only the purified soul can attain the perfection of associating with the personality of Godhead in complete bliss and satisfaction in his constitutional state. Whoever is able to renovate such devotional service is never again attracted by this material world, and he never returns. Long purport. Your Majesty Maharaj Parikshit, thus know that all I have described in reply to your proper inquiry is just in accordance to the version of the Vedas, and it is eternal truth. This was described by the personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, unto Brahma, with whom the Lord was satisfied upon being properly worshipped. For those who are wandering in the material universe, there is no more auspicious means of deliverance than what is aimed at in direct devotional service to Lord Krishna. Bhagavan Brahma Karchnyena Trir Adiksha Manishaya Tadadyai Vashatkutasto Rataratma Yato Bhavet. The great personality of Brahma, with great attention and concentration of mind, studied the Vedas three times, and after scrutinizingly examining them, he ascertained that attraction for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the highest perfection of religion. The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is in every living being along with the individual soul. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. And this is a very famous purport. Will probably go through the whole Astanga Yoga system. It's about three pages. Yeah. O King, it is therefore essential. Tasmat sarva mana rajan harir sarvatra sarvada shotavya kirtitavya cha smartavyo bhagavan nirnam. It is therefore essential that every human being hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, always and everywhere. And last verse. Pibantiye bhagavata atmasattam katamritam shravanaputeshubritam punanti te vishaya vidushitayasham vrajanti tacharanasharo ruhantikam. Those who drink through oral reception, fully filled with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees, purify the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment and go back home, back to Godhead, to the lotus feet of Him, the personality of Godhead. Prabhupada's purport, that's why the process of bhakti yoga, directly accepted as suggested in this verse by sufficient hearing of the transcendental message of the Lord, the material contamination is directly eliminated without one's attempting to contemplate the impersonal virat conception of the Lord. And by practicing bhakti yoga, if the performer is not purified by material contamination, he must be a pseudo devotee. For such an impasse posture, there is no remedy for being free from material entanglements. So, Bhagavad Gita. So, this is a very, powerful message. It's like, when you hear Prabhupada writing like this and everything else, and you hear anybody else talking about things, it's just in comparison. It's just like, if nothing else, the purity and intensity of the words. The thought is so lucid, the flow of the grammar, the diction, everything is just so clear. And after that you come to the point, what's he saying? And he's talking about God in a logical fashion and going back to him and describing a very clear process, which is through a yoga system, which used to work. And he's giving a modern bhakti yoga system like that. And so many people are describing other things. Other kinds of pleasures. In this perspective, you see, it is. It's phantasmagoria. One devotee was a surgeon in Portland, Oregon. He had Indians. And he said, he was working there in a hospital. He said, all that happened was that there'd be, surgeons working on somebody or anesthetized on the table with, what do they use? Nitrous oxide, there. And they got a sheet over you, so not to be distracted by other things. And you got to do a, gallbladder removal or something. So they got you a whole procedure, very technical thing, great training. So maybe four people there working, and so they got you cut the sheet, cut it open, mark the thing with iodine, cut that open. Use the rongeurs to pull it back, stretch the skin, look inside, see what there is, cut this, pull that out. Use these circular. They call needles on pliers to go through the skin, pull it out. There's a whole scientific process like that. Take a sample of this, send it off to the laboratory, wait for 30 minutes for response. Yeah, it's cancer, and on like that. And it's the same thing every day. Maybe you do three operations a day, and you get paid a fortune. You go home and there's nobody in the house but your dog. He's been enjoying the house all day. Your wife comes home from some similar work. You just have a few minutes together, eat something, watch something, and go to sleep and get up and go back to work. And so make a lot of money. And what happens then after about, maybe like about 6 weeks, more than that, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, then you take your wife, your kids, you're looking at all these brochures, and you go to the Bahamas, right? And there's a whole tour for like $8,000 or something like that for 10 days in the Bahamas. And you land at the airport and it's different climate and the people are waiting for you with these signs, with Mr. Rajiv Gupta family. And there's a town car waiting for you. And they put your luggage and you go right to the hotel and it's beautiful, like a fairyland for children and waterfalls following. And you wake up and there's fruit and you meet the other members of the tour. And then you go to the princess cruise ship and travel and visit five places in the Bahamas and clubs and dancing and seeing things and tours and get attacked by sharks something happens. But the guy gets saved with only minor wounds on his legs and flies back home but we'll be more careful, And then finally you fly back and you have no money, And you come back exhausted, practically speaking, So he said, what happens? Then what happens is you talk, everybody asks you while you're doing surgery. They all talk about, well, how was it? How was that vacation? Well, I went to Trinidad, but also. Now, why went? It's all they talk about. Basically, there's nothing else. They talk about their, a little bit about the family and these problems, but mostly it's all about their vacations. At least in that group. pretty common. So they work so hard, and then they, you know, they cash it all in, you know, for their trip to the heavenly planets. Marcha loka vishanti. Kshine punya, marcha loka vishanti. When the punya is finished, they got to come back again and cut them open, stitch them up, cut it out, you know, check it in, check it out. Fill out all the forms for the government work, all this form, that form, the money coming, you know, you know. It's hellish work, really. And you get this temporary flickering pleasure, you know, like that. And so some people, you know, begin to figure out, you know, this is not the way. And so they start to take some kind of process, you know, different processes are available, right? And different, you know, yoga things or Aikido, we're discussing that today. It's like it's a martial arts style from Japan. And it's very non-violent. You don't become aggressive. But they're really into energy flow and stuff like that. And very sophisticated, you know, development of exercises and stuff like that. And they're very proud of being non-violent. Very proud of this, you know. They have big wrists too, like these exercises. But there's a whole little, kind of a philosophy behind it, you know, about flow of energy and contact and life. And for example, one Aikido master wrote a book about power napping, you know, how to calm your whole body down and go into a shushupti, deep sleep within just 5 minutes, you know, like that. And if you do that, then your whole gross body breaks. You come out of the gross body, the prana, and escape, and your subtle body breathes, you know, and it goes back in again. And you wake up like that. So it happens in deep sleep, like that. But it was, you know, showing how to do it within just 5 minutes. So you're at work, and you just, you know, you can just go right down to the state and get totally refreshed. Like that. If there's prana in the area, if the room is dead, like there's not much prana here, right? It's kind of like that. But if the windows are open, there's pine trees, and yeah, you know, you can just relax and come out of your body. You know? But too much protein, like soy, you're drinking soy milk or something, and it's all flowing in your prana, and so you can't come out of the body. It's like a hose. When the water's flowing in it, you can't bend it, right? So all these nadis are full of this intensely flowing prana at night. You lie down and maybe you go to the dreaming state, right? Shupti, but you don't go into sushupti. You don't go into deep sleep. So you wake up kind of a little superficially refreshed, but not really. And got to eat some more soy milk and go, you know, and protein supplement and go off to work and keep yourself awake by doing things and like that. You know? Yeah? So the different level. Okay, somebody teaches you how to sleep that properly. Think, oh, this is the highest level. I can sleep now. Yeah, but then you're still not satisfied in different things. Yeah? So again, somebody is making Brahmande Brahmate Kon Bhagyavan Jeev Guru. It's a very essential verse. Somehow or other, some jiva wandering all these levels, these celestial levels, these earthly levels. Yeah, he comes in contact with Krishna or Guru, and from him he gets an experience of this transcendental world, the absolute spiritual world, which is what? Not to be even a seer of things, but to be seen by Krishna. That, you know? Again, some great personality, you know, is the president of Micron, or Bill Gates, you know, or George Bush, or the Pope, you know, like that. You're there, somebody in George Bush is looking at you, you know, and he's looking at him, and he's seeing you, you know, and he's kind of, there you go over, you know, he starts asking you questions, he wants to see you, he's asking, who are you, what do you do, like this and that, you know, and do you do this and that, have you ever been to so-and-so, so then you feel like, this is my position, you know, to be seen by some great personality, like, are you an artist, can you paint, do you write, more, yeah. So it's, yes, you know. So all these qualities are coming out. We don't know about them, but Krishna is the enjoyer. You know, can you do this and that? Did you ever do this or that? Well, yes, a long time ago I used to do that and this and that. And did we do that? Yes, yes. Do you know who I am? Yeah, I know who you are. You know, yeah. So that's being seen by Krishna. It pulls out of us more and more. It's a dynamic process of growth. You know, stages, releasing, letting go, you know, like that, you know. So this is what he's recommending here, is this bhakti yoga process. But it's very nice to compare it with the Ashtanga yoga system, you know, like that. Why? Because if you're Prabhupada was saying one time that some people in this movement were great demigods and goddesses, right? Now you're here. Others were great yogis and yoginis, and now you're here. And other people just kind of wandered in, and they're just beginning like that, you know? But I think I was a yogi, because all these things, I understand them like, it's like that, this kind of aspect of it. Demigod knows, I was an administrator, you know? So Bhagavatam presents this in so many analogies, and you finally say, I can understand this now. That's how, I can see what we're talking about. But the best process always from the very beginning is bhakti yoga, right? Where you know what the goal is, right? And you're going through different ways to get to it, according to your nature. Yeah? I mean, some people take our ISKCON as a Ashtanga yoga. They really focus on the process of controlling their mind, chanting their japa, and probably gives many, many things for them. If you, for example, say, just by chanting 16 rounds, remaining celibate, and worshipping Tulsi, you acquire intense mystical powers. Yeah? So, okay. There it is. So that's what they hear. Yeah, and somebody else understands about supremacy over other human beings and protecting people, and Dhruva Maharaj became king, and that happened, and that's what he wants, and that's his process. So then if I'm really good and take care of the people on the earth and sacrifice and protect them, in the end, because he's so grateful, God himself will come and thank me like that and say, thank you for taking care of your brothers and sisters. So that's his process, like that. So really reading on and on and on, and hearing more and more, finding out different things, different levels like that, and becoming purified, and giving up our position as pseudo devotees. One time I met Jesus Christ. Oh, where is it? Here, where's going? Sure seemed like him. I was in Sacramento, California, and I was reading Prabhupada's books. I was visiting the temple. I still had this very complicated family relationship and my wife and this and that and everything else. And it was, I had to solve this problem for everybody involved. So I couldn't live in the temple then, but I was living there and I was, working for a Swedish cabinet maker and taking karate courses from this other guy. And so, I was just adjusting things the best I could. So one morning I was sitting in front of the floor heater in my house chanting, and I had a lot of anxiety because I was working for the guy I was working for was a Jehovah's Witness. And he was, this is all from the devil. All these Hindu religions are from the devil. Like that, And if you give up Jesus Christ and worship these things, you're going to go to hell. This is all a trick of the devil, So I was just beginning as a devotee. And I didn't want to go to hell. Well, maybe it is. Maybe the devil is tricking me like that or something like that. He's a pretty tricky guy, So I was praying to God or something. Well, please give me some kind of help about this, what I should do. And so then for one moment I was chanting, and then behind me was this personality. And as far as I can tell, it was Jesus Christ. And it was like, the whole experience was like this, that long, but it was like, it was on the intellectual level. It wasn't even on the mental level. It was direct communication of concept, didn't have to be an idea, just a direct communication, conceptual communication like that, right? And so then it was, I kind of like was very kind of tall and very pure, I wanted to kind of turn around, but I didn't want to turn around. It's like that, because again, all of my, I want to be a devotee. I want to serve God. I don't want to be fooled by the devil. I want this and that, and in this presence, it was like, yeah. You're in this for your own benefit, for your own purposes like that, even in the name of religion. You're there for your own benefits, like that. So in comparison to this personality, I could see all of my religion was pseudo, maybe 99.9%. And so then the communication was, you understand that you're full of selfish desires. And for honor, distinction, praise, comfort, beautiful pleasure, beautiful houses, nice notebooks, like that. Not gross. And all of them are gross, too. Okay. So if you want to ask me questions about what to do, you've got to be a lot more pure than you are now. And I could see that. There was no, Again, it was all this concept, So what I suggest is you find any movement, culture, which will help you become purified, and you just work with them. And that was it. That was the whole kind of thing. And it was a perfect answer to my question, because the Hare Krishna didn't smoke, they didn't drink. You know, they were very controlled in their adultery and fornication and all these things. They had an actual practical process you could do every day. And I was becoming purified. And maybe I was going to becoming purified and going to hell. But that seems unlikely. You know. Even in the Bible? No, right? You know that, right? You know that in the Bible? What's the argument? All these arguments are in the Bible. Because when Jesus Christ was casting out devils, purifying people of these things, they said, oh yes, but he casts out devils by the power of the supreme devil. Like that. That was his argument. Yes, you're becoming purified, but by the power of the devil. Like that, you know. So his response was very nice. He said, a house divided against itself cannot stand. You know. So if I'm throwing out these people by the power of the devil, then the devil's house will become destroyed. Like that. So very basic arguments. Yeah, okay. And becoming purified. You know. So it's very powerful experience. You know, and everybody has these. Actually, our Western culture just hides all these. But actually, you investigate. Everybody has different. But you forget about them because nothing left you reminded, cultivated. You know, you forget about it. So that's the bija. Maybe more than one seed, maybe many seeds you get, but at least one of them you got to get going. And how do you cultivate it? By remembering it, by talking about it, by contacting people, by hearing, chanting, and it grows like that, you know? And you start finding different association. You know? Even within the International Society for Christians, someone says, ISKCON is like this, ISKCON is like that, ISKCON is like this. I laugh. You know? I think, ISKCON? There is no ISKCON. You know, there's 500 temples, right? What to speak of 500 people? Right? How much variety are you going to find in 500 people? You know, 500 ISKCON members. You know, you find all kinds of people. One of my disciples in Denver, his parents were alcoholics, and he got divorced. And he had a really difficult childhood. And he's grown up with a lot of emotional scars and stuff, and had a very hard time with relationships with people. So he was in the Denver temple, and one time he was having some stress, and he started smoking marijuana. So by Krishna's arrangement, the temple president caught him. He said, come to my office. So he went in and sat him down, and he said, where are you getting this stuff? So my disciple spontaneously said, Prabhu, I only smoke with Prabhupada disciples. Like that. So the temple president is sitting there looking at him, and just like, you know, just breaks down in hysterical laughter, you know, like that. And calms himself down. He says, all right, okay. The guy said, and he started talking to him about, you know, what was happening, the position, and everything else, and you got to solve this problem, and talk to us, we'll help you, on and on like that, you know, so on. So yeah, I mean, if you want to just, you know, I know people like that. I mean, there's a whole community in ISKCON, and they're not, I think most of them, they have a feeling of guilt. Guilt or like desire, you know, maybe not guilt, but they want to change, you know. And one devotee also, same thing, after 30 years, still has probably marijuana, but he's been distributing books all the time too. So it's obviously a more complex problem, you know what it is, a more complex problem than just like he's evil, you know, or pseudo-devotee. He's more, risks himself more than we do to get out there and meet people, you know. And so, but he was married, and his wife, they're still married. He has like 6 or 8 kids like that, and then they're growing up, and one of them married a devotee, a son, and then they got a divorce, and then they got remarried by another devotee, and he was talking about all this. And he's saying there's so much mercy in this movement. If you just don't commit offenses to people and Krishna sends you away, this somehow or other is so ample that somehow or other you just stay involved in the whole thing. He said, my kids have already gotten married and divorced, you know, second wife. But they're always getting, you know, remarrying devotees. You know, and it's just, yeah, they're going up, you know, they're going up. You know? So we find our position, our consciousness, our nature, and then get to work, you know. That's the right position for you. What's the best position? Forget about that. What's the best position for you? That's the only thing that matters. Because unlimited progress available. And here he's describing, you know, yogis who are attached, yogis who are detached. And the Bhagavatam will go on like that. It actually doesn't come to... You know, Lord Chaitanya is giving us the 10th canto from the very beginning. But, well, pretty practically speaking, it's in the very beginning, it's there, in a conclusion like that, you know? Like that. Yeah. So any questions or anything? Or? comments? Anybody have material desire?
Oh, okay. Just the powers you get from being celibate, worshiping Tulsi, and
chanting 16 rounds.
Yeah. You could. Do those manifest after your consciousness? I mean, can you explain that more?
Yeah. I'll give you, you know. One time we were in the lobby of the Berkeley Temple. Have you been? Even seen that? No, it's pretty big. It's a big lobby like that. It was Sunday Feast, big temple building. I mean, you can fit about, in chairs, about 500 people in the temple, in both sections like that. So maybe 250 people the Sunday Feast. It's kind of winding down. The whole thing's over. And maybe half the people finished Prasadam. So I was in the lobby, and little kids, younger than this, they were just cutting up, you know, screaming and running and everything else, and their parents couldn't control them. And then Abhimanyu Das is a brahmacharya and everything else, worshipping Tulsi, chanting 16 rounds, 44 principles. And also he was like an ashram teacher, you know. And he came in and just picked one of the kids up by his shirt like that. He's about a big guy. You know. He said, "Stop this!" You know. And all the rest of the kids are watching, and he put him down. He ran to his mother, and they all ran to their mothers, like it looks at everybody like that, you know. And they're all like completely good. You know? And it lasted for about 10 to 15 minutes, like that, you know, like that. And so I could see, he had this, it was a mystery how he could do it. All he said was just stop it, you know, but he was like, you know, it was so terrifying. That he was. So this is a mystical power. I mean, any woman knows this, you know, that to control small children, you know, even men know this too, it's a mystical power to control small children. You know. Or else, again too, you go on book distribution, right? Same thing, you go out there and you just realize, God, I could never do this before, you know, but it's just somehow or other I can meet people and I can look at them and they look back at me and, you know, you develop it. But at the same time too, is that Krishna is careful if he sees you becoming attached, like Daksha. You know Daksha? In the fourth canto, he was a great performer of austerities. He became king of the universe, you know, under the authority of Lord Brahma. But he was proud of his austerities, of his sacrifice, of his sankirtan, right? You become a big book distributor, very famous, training other people, collecting so much money, build a powerful temple. GBC secretary makes you president of the temple, you know, hundreds of devotees, but you're proud of, you know, your sankirtan, right? And then all these horrible things happen because of that, you know, for him to learn, you know, to get free of this problem. So, okay, then Krishna doesn't give you like, he sees this is, he's not ready for this, you know, yeah. You know, the ultimate mystical power is describing here is the ability to control the mind. By this you can actually control the mind. And what I mean, always keeping the mind engaged in Krishna's service. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if you can do your service your whole life and no concern if anybody notices you or anything else, your service, that's self-realization. Right? Just stay in your service and do it your whole life and with no desire for distinction, fame, anything. Nobody notices me. You know? That's self-realization. The most difficult yoga asana is? Dandavat. It's very rare to find a yogi who can do this posture. You see them. I mean, you see the books where they're doing the postures. Just, you know, it's filled full of pride. Like that, you know, this leg goes over here, this goes here, like that, you know. So skinny in a bathing suit, right? In a bathing suit, you know. Hair combed back, you know, all black hair, no gray hair at 67 years old, you know, like that, you know, living on, you know, on raw fruits and vegetables, you know, like that, you know. So that's the greatest mystical power greatest mystery is how to get free from vanity. You know. But you see it, to do your service, You know, people dress the deities. God, it's miraculous. You know how you could do this. It's so beautiful. And it's all these things. You know, I never knew how I could do it. Wow. Good. Yeah. Okay. Mystical powers. He was a yogi in his last life. Yeah. Way back again. Yeah. Yes, sir.
You also talked about discovering nature.
Yeah. It's okay, we're on time. Yeah.
So, in discovering your nature, I assume that you don't necessarily discover yourself. You help this. To understand being helped to understand.
And by the process of bhakti yoga, because bhakti, beginning bhakti yoga, hearing, chanting, the regular duties. But then it's in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, right away, then Krishna begins to say, vritti, how this can be expanded into varnashram dharma. The pure process of hearing and chanting is good to begin with, but we have always material attachments, you know, entanglements like that, you know. So we have to go into them, you know, and see, okay, yeah, Arjuna is attached to being a kshatriya. Not attached to the results of being a kshatriya, kingdom, honor, prestige, feminine adoration. Not attached to those, but he's attached to the work, you know. And people experience that. You like cooking, right? You know, even though there's nobody to eat, you like cooking, right? It's so common amongst ladies, right? It's, you know, nothing needs to be cooked, right? But you just got to cook, you know, more, you know, or else art, right? Myself, I like art. If I found some kind of art I can do simply with the tools like that. I keep journals, you know. So this is karma, Mishra Bhakti Yoga. You got to discover, okay, I'm attached. What is my attachment? Yeah? Yeah, I was talking about the Morti, he's an older devotee. In Argentina, I had three Grihastha couples, disciples, like that, so on. They were all having problems. And she, you know, she were same age. We've seen it all, you know, and this and that. And finally, the conclusion we came down to is very simple, that the family life is basically 90% of the time happy when the husband has a job where he can make money in a reasonable fashion and he thinks he's doing something useful for society. It's a job that's actually useful and it's like it makes money without, you know, too much problem. Okay, that's that. And the wife has a few children, like that. And okay, it's 90% of the problems in family life are satisfied, and like that. You know? Yeah. And people are different, but that's basically it. You know, most ladies want to have a few children. You know, and they feel, now I'm useful. I can take somebody and train them up to be a good human being. That's what I'm supposed to do, you know. And the husband feels, okay. In the beginning, the tendency of the wolf in the beginning is to eat the babies, right? So the female wolf protects them. But after some time, then he just starts to develop this attraction. And you're just like me. I'll take him out hunting and show him how to catch rabbits. And, you know, because my disciples are saying, oh, my God, now I don't want to have children, but I don't want to ruin my wife's life, that she wants to have children. What do I do? And we're both telling him, yeah, it's just, in the beginning, it's just you don't know what to do, but after the child reaches a little while, you begin to develop a very natural, intense attraction towards your son. You know? You see, you're responding like that. So don't worry, it'll come. Don't worry. Trust us. We know what we're talking about. It won't be a problem. And then, you know, a man, in his final day, he's about to die. He looks at his son and he thinks, he's a better man than I am. He says, okay. It was okay. See you later. You know? And other things too, but that's sufficient satisfaction in life to think that you took somebody and you made him a better, you know, a better human being than you are. Yeah? Like that, you know. So this varnashram, it's very natural. You know, like that. So you find your position in the varnashram system, and then you can be engaged in bhakti yoga all the time. Your civilized, normal civilized behavior becomes bhakti yoga, daivi varna ashram dharma. At that point, how can you fall down? Yeah, you're protected, and it becomes more and more ecstasy. Arjuna is engaged in a political battle with his cousins, right, for the kingdom, but for him, it's a war with Krishna, and with Krishna. Yeah, so at one point, before the whole battle starts, Krishna tells him, he said, this is not an ordinary battle. It's not an ordinary family fight. This is the beginning of Kali Yuga. And what we're fighting against here is not Duryodhana. We're fighting against my own dark nature. The dark side of the force. You know. And he said, this is absolute. There's no second chance. There's no other place. If we don't do it here, everything is lost. So can you do it? And Arjuna said, yeah. You know. So when Abhimanyu was killed, Arjuna fell apart. It was too much. This war was just... One famous movie, when generals telling the President of the United States, he said, you know, the Russians aren't the enemy. The enemy is war. You know, like that. And so Arjuna realized at that point, it was just too much. And so then Krishna told him, he said, I know what you're going through, but I remember I told you this was going to happen. This is absolute evil. So you promised me. So I'm asking you now, please, push your heart back together somehow or other. Put a staple in it. Now let's get back to work. That's why Arjuna did it. Jai, thanks. Otherwise, this Kali Yuga would be complete, you know, oblivion. Finally, Gandhari is cursing Krishna and everybody else. And he said, yes, I had to do evil things. Even I had to do things that weren't completely proper. But you have to understand that Kali Yuga is my own evil side. And with the help of the Pandavas, I was able to save a lot like that. But yes, I admit, even I did things that weren't completely correct. But that's Kali Yuga. So she became pacified. So you got to find your position in Varnashram, and then it's you know, it becomes, Krishna starts giving you more and more intense responsibilities as you can handle them. So your life doesn't become any more just a social activity for sense gratification. It becomes social activity for the absolute battle of good against evil. This is it. Right? Now we're going into the prison to argue with the warden about something, but you know that this is going to pass through the whole prison system and the entire world. Our decision here. So we're going in today to face the warden. Discuss this. No. And every move has to be just right. Yeah. I'm not ready. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. So we chant Hare Krishna, engage in devotional service, talk to people, try different things. And yeah, you can see, you know, it's just not my nature. I'm not going to do that again. It's like that. Well, you know, I was president one time, and everybody said, you know, let's not do that again. Because I'm too idealistic. You know, at one point, because I was so idealistic, I was becoming so frustrated that I was going to throw my briefcase on the ground. It was an 8-people meeting, you know. I was just going to throw my briefcase on the ground. Because one devotee was acting, he was acting like nonsense, you know. But it stuck on my finger, kind of, some other. Instead of going on the ground, it kind of flew at him. he dodged back like that and stuff. And I was kind of like, you know, and it was kind of like, you know. But it kind of, I don't know, it was Krishna's arrangement, but it fit into to the argument like that. And he kind of like, you know, gave up his like nonsense thing, and it went on like that. And people were saying, wow, that was really intense move there. You know, it was kind of, maybe Krishna's arrangement was like, you know, then after that you go and have a drink, right? You know, something, you know? That's Kshatriya Dharma. Yeah. So you gotta find your nature. Yeah? Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's okay. So final comments, questions? Okay, the ultimate question.
What was the purpose? It said like Krishna appears to destroy irreligion and some religion.
Yeah.
We see that right after Krishna disappeared, irreligion came up again.
Yeah.
Right after he disappeared, Kali came like this. So it seems as though Krishna's appearance and all this whole battle didn't have much purpose.
No, because before he came, it's kind of like, because Krishna wasn't a Yuga avatar. Yeah. Lila Purushottam Sri Krishna. You know, he was kind of like a Lila avatar. Right? At that time, because of the influence of different demons, the world had become overburdened, so Brahma prayed for him, so he came, and he decided the time had come, you know, for his this and that descent. So he came as Krishna and showed these pastimes like that. And he did his mission, he purified everything, and was purified for some time. And I guess, you know, if Kali had come without Krishna coming, it would have been this all ready for him, you know. But so when he came, it was obvious what the problem was and everything else. And then Maharaj Pariksit established the proper situation. And then Krishna took him out and replaced him with Srimad Bhagavatam. And came himself as Lord Chaitanya to reinforce it like that. So it's always there. It's like, again, in the prison, they always keep the progressive system intact, supposedly, you know, so that people want to make progress and everything else. Look, this guy's retiring and he needs somebody in his position. So they make some adjustment and keep it always intact like that. So Krishna's doing this in prison. He's doing the same thing. He's keeping everything intact. There's different cycles. You know, again, there's morning time in the prison. There's night time. And at night time, probably the staff is... How much is... What's the staff in the daytime in your prison? How many people?
You obviously have more staff in the daytime.
Yeah.
And it's usually on the midnight shift, they have less staff working.
Yeah.
And it's less activity.
Yeah. Yeah. So same way, there's different kinds of things happening and different things functioning. So yeah. So Krishna came. You know, he knew this was going to happen. And so he established the Srimad Bhagavatam. say that. Okay? So let's chant a little bit here. Lord Chaitanya said, they asked him, how to chant Hare Krishna? When he started preaching chanting, he said, chant Hare Krishna on beads, Maha Mantra, and with your family, every evening, sit together in the patio and chant, Haraye Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. You're not hearing properly. Yeah. Haraye Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. There's no Hari. Yeah. Haraye Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Yeah. In the song by Narottam Das Thakur, he uses that, but he adds Hari Haraye, and he adds two more lines. But the actual mantra in Chaitanya Charitamrita is Haraye Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Haraye Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Now you can add Hari. I think Lord Chaitanya added it for a certain circumstance another time. But that's what he says in Chaitanya Bhagavad. Haraye Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. So maybe this is Krishna in Dwarka, Yadavaya, like that Hari. Gopal Govinda Ram Sri Madhusudan.
Gopal Govinda Ram Sri Madhusudan.
Okay, this is Jagannath Swami. Right? Gopal Govinda is Krishna. Gopal Govinda Ram, Balaram. And Sri Madhusudan, that's the feminine Shakti of the killer of demons, Subhadra. Wow, what a speculation. Oh, why not? So that's Krishna, Krishna in Vrindavan, like that. Hari Haraye Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Hari Haraye Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Gopal Govinda Ram Srimad Sudan. Gopal Govinda Ram Srimad Sudan. Giridhari Gopinatha Madana Mohan. Hari Haraye Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Yadavaya Madhavaya Keshavaya Namaha. Gopal Govinda Ram Srimadu Sudan. Giridhari Gopinath Varana Mohan. Shri Chaitanya Nityananda Shri Advaita Sita. Hari Gurun Vaishnavam Bhagavata Gita. Shri Rup Shri Sanatan Bhata Raghunatha. Shri Jiva Gopala Bhata Dasa Raghunatha. Hari Haraye Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Gopal Govinda Ram Srimadu Sudan. Giridhari Gopinath Madana Mohan. Madana Mohana Madana Mohana. Madana Bihari Madana Bihari. Madana Gopala Madana Gopala. Gopal Govinda Ram Madhusudan. Giridhari Gopinath Madana Mohan. Radha Madhumohan Radha Madhumohan Radha Radha Madhumohan Radha Madhumohan Radha Sanatana Goswami Sananahe Jaya Radha Madhumohan Radha Madhumohan Radha Jaya Krishna Balaram Jaya Giri Govardhan Jaya Krishna Balaram Jaya Giri Govardhan Jaya Krishna Balaram Jaya Radhe Shyam Jaya Krishna Balaram Jaya Radhe Shyam Jaya Krishna Balaram Jaya Nanda Maharaj Krishna Balaram Jaya Nanda Maharaj Jaya Nanda Maharaj Jaya Yashoda Mayi Jaya Nanda Maharaj Jaya Yashoda Mayi Jaya Yashoda Mayi Jaya Vrindavanam Jaya Yashoda Mayi Jaya Vrindavanam Jaya Vrindavanam Jaya Krishna Balaram Jaya Vrindavanam Jaya Krishna Balaram Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Shri Vrindavan Dham ki, Krishna Balaram ki, Govardhanandi Hare Hare. Thank you all very much. Oh, very nice. You know how I'm morning?